Please be seated. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Ms. Cowden, Ms. Fine, good morning. Ready to go? The first case on our docket this morning is Leslie Lewis v. Maria Lewis Perdomo, case number 66497. Ms. Cowden.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. It's Tammy Cowden, and with me is Maria Katz, who has assisted in argument preparation.
Welcome, Ms. Katz.
And we represent Wesley Allen Lewis, who is present in the courtroom. I'm sure the Court is sufficiently aware of the facts, or do you wish me to go over them?
I don't know that that's entirely necessary, but there certainly may be some facts that you may want to talk about in the context of the legal arguments you've raised.
Okay, so I'll bypass the factual statement and just jump right into things. I raised four issues for the Court's consideration. The District Court failed to make sufficient findings to support a modification of physical custody. Court improperly imposed a criminal contempt without ensuring that the due process rights of Mr. Lewis were satisfied. The court deviated from the child support guidelines by imposing a tutoring expense without sufficient evidence in the record to support such a deviation and without making the required findings. And finally, that the court displayed a lack of neutrality and a bias throughout the proceedings such that no one reading that record could assume that Mr. Lewis did in fact receive a fair hearing.
Ms. Cowden, you were not present at the time that this proceeding took place. Is that a correct statement?
That is correct. I pursuant to this court's pro bono program, I undertook Mr. Wesley's representation. He was not represented by counsel in the lower court, and I think it was very apparent, if you have read the transcripts of those hearings, that Mr. Wesley did need counsel. He was overwhelmed by the proceedings, and that was very apparent. And the fact that he didn't have counsel was not only affected the process, but it was actually held against him that he did not have counsel by the district court.
He was no stranger, however, to the courtroom or these proceedings. Would that also be a fair statement?
Yes, that would be a fair statement, Your Honor. In fact, as shown in the brief, there had been a proceeding the previous fall, and which there was no appeal, and I sincerely wish there had been. I have reviewed the transcript of that matter as well, and if I'd had the opportunity, we'd have been here on that as well.
So in what way do you feel that the district court applied the wrong standard on the modification of joint custody?
Well, I did say that in your brief, and I apologize. It's my lack of experience in the family law matters. I did, in the opening brief, say that the wrong standard had been applied.
Well, let me pause you there, because it did catch my eye when I read it, and I noted that your respondent came back and said, well, under Rivera, if what you're doing is moving to modify a joint custody to a primary custody, you need not show changed circumstances. But I question why that should be the law, and what possible public policy reason would justify that when you have a statutory presumption that joint custody is what's preferred. You have a final decree awarding joint custody, and someone is coming to move it to change that. I'm not clear on what is required to undo as a matter of stare decisis or res judicata or whatever you want to call it. It would be have been established. So is it enough just to say, well, today the best interests of the child are to revise this?
Well, let me address that second issue first, because in fact the court made that bare conclusory finding but didn't actually follow the standards required, because she did not go through the factors set forth in the statute the same factors as exist today under a new statutory.
New numbers, yeah.
But it is essentially the same statute. The court didn't go through any of those findings. The court, or those factors, and didn't relate her findings, all of which essentially related to the deficiency she perceived in Mr. Lewis, but not her findings with regard to Ms. Perdomo, and didn't relate those fact findings. So in this case, certainly it was not enough to say that it was in the best interest because that was not supported by sufficient findings. To address your other question, you're making me wish I'd had more temerity in my brief. I did not.
I'm asking you as an advocate, have you seen a rationale articulated that would support the distinction my law draws anywhere? I haven't.
No, I have not. And in fact, certainly the most recent legislation from our assembly would indicate that it is indeed very much a strong public policy in Nevada that there be joint custody and shared parenting time. The standards for changing or for not awarding a joint arrangement have been strengthened by the court. So you're correct. I didn't make that argument, but I certainly agree with it.
Yeah, I don't want to waste your time on it, but it struck me as...
So the court failed to make sufficient findings. In fact, Justice Pickering...
So your argument under that issue is that even applying Rivero, there's an absence of findings on what created the basis for the change in joint custody status.
Precisely, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that, as I read it, you're also arguing that what appears to have motivated it, and we don't have enough findings to say for sure, was your client's non-compliance in the court's view with the court's orders, and that under, I think it's Sims, that cannot be a basis for retributively or punitively changing custody.
Correct. I mean, if you read the court's oral findings, it's very clear that she was primarily concerned about what she perceived to be a lack of following her orders. And if you examine that further, you then discover that she's talking about noncompliance before the orders were finalized. She's talking about a perceived noncompliance with the tutoring order, which had stated that Mr. Lewis was to take the child to the tutoring session after school, and he didn't take her on our school days.
It was mutually agreed that they would discontinue the Kumon tutoring and or until the test scores of the young child were at a certain level. And there was a bit more than just, and I don't disagree with you for a minute, that this transcript is troubling in many ways. But there were other factors, too, that the record shows us, slant, though it may be. It appears as if credibility was an issue. It appears as if the child may have been taking care of herself when she was in or supposed to be in dad's care. There was certainly inconsistent testimony between grandma and dad. There were findings from the school with respect to lateness, with respect to actual absences. The child was held back once. And there was a little bit more than the judge's apparent attitude with respect to noncompliance, right?
I would disagree with some of that, Your Honor. If you look at the testimony regarding the school, the school reports actually indicated that this was actually a high-performing child in school and who had no behavioral issues, despite...
Yeah, you got that.
Right.
Isn't there a conflict between that conclusion and the absence of Kuma's results? That was one of my questions. I want you to explain that, if you could, or ask Ms. Fine to do that.
What there's actually an absence of in the record, Your Honor, is any evidence that Kuman tests with respect to grade levels. Hmm. There was, in fact, evidence in the record, undisputed, that under the CCSD testing, the child had scored above grade level. Mother admitted she scored above grade level.
In both math and reading, or just in reading?
Both, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mother was unaware that the child had scored above grade level in math, but Mr. Lewis testified, and he presented the evidence of the test results to the court, that in fact she had tested above both the school average and the district average for grade level.
Under CCSD standards?
Yes.
And your point is the Kumon or Kumon or whatever the, how you pronounce it is, doesn't even, there's no evidence that it offers testing?
There's no evidence that it offers testing at full grade level.
Okay.
The Kumon issue is one that truly illustrates how counsel would have been a real help in this case, because there should have been some exploration about that so-called tutoring that Kumon presents.
Even giving some explanation and or advocacy with respect to the tutoring and reaching a certain grade level, wasn't there also testimony that said that Dad just unilaterally stopped taking the child to the tutoring classes because it was too far during the summer?
He testified that he stopped taking her in the summer, and he actually said, the order said after school, which is what the order said, after school. He also said that he had told her that it's too far, it being 18 miles in the middle of the day, that round trip, by the way, I believe. So
9 miles
one of the
way
those were the factors that affected him. But we also have the fact that by the time the summer started, the child had already tested above grade level, and so there should not have been any continued Kumon, unless mother wished it to be, to continue, which she had the right to do, but also to pay for it.
There were other issues, too, and you're drawing into your time, but there were other issues with respect to what is considered a normal co-parenting agreement, that is, the ability of mom to contact the child on the phone when she was under the care and custody of dad. That was also something that apparently the judge was concerned about.
The judge was concerned about it, but the judge was not concerned about a similar lack of the father's inability to reach the child when she was with mother, which there was testimony in the record to that effect as well, from, in fact, acknowledged, in fact, from mother. So this actually illustrates the very troubling aspect that the court continually applied differing standards, always giving the mother coaching the mother in many respects. There were instances where she actually coached the mother's testimony. She certainly interfered with Mr. Lewis's attempts to examine the mother, interfered with Mr. Lewis's attempt to present his own testimony, and that really goes into the bias. I've been doing this for more than 25 years, and I don't think I've ever seen a case before where I actually thought there was bias. Clients always think that. This record showed it.
Well, I'm glad the clients are here, at least your client. You can argue that the judge engaged in bias, but what brings everybody to the court is the behavior of the parties, which is troubling to me, period. Dad doesn't pay child support. He can certainly control that. Dad doesn't take the kids to counseling. If there's some ambiguity in the order, you don't get it straightened out, you just ignore it. This kind of stuff goes on and on and on, and so you end up in these situations where a judge is asked to enforce the rules and become involved in this process. I think the parents play with fire when they behave this way.
Well, you're saying the father refused to take the child to counseling. That's not actually what occurred. The record doesn't support that.
Well, rather than saying it's too far and getting clarification of the order, you put yourself at risk of being held in contempt. Right?
Okay, the counseling is not where we have the issue of too far.
I understand.
For the issue of the counseling, we had the Mr. Wheatley leaving a message. We don't know where he left the message. We don't know what phone he was calling, but we do know that the district court chastised Mr. Lewis for not having a message service. So with whom did Mr. Wheatley leave his messages?
There was also a recommendation that Dad receive counsel. The dad acknowledged, at least in one interview, that he believed he needed, he never followed through with that either. Is that also a fair statement?
That is a fair statement, and it's also in the record that Mr. Lewis testified that he earns $15,000 a year.
So we have a situation where issues include the improper designation of contempt, the change in custody. What about that contempt? I mean, it's pretty clear in this record that there was noncompliance with orders. What do you believe the judge should have done with respect to violation of those court orders and or contempt?
Going to answer as quickly as I can so I can reserve some time for rebuttal, if I may.
I'll give you 2 minutes. Go ahead and answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. In terms of the noncompliance, I think there's an issue of inability to pay. There was no finding of inability to pay, a present ability to pay. I think that's an issue. Also, some of the issue, I mean, the noncompliance,
but was that argued at all?
No. Well, yes, he attempted to make the argument. He talked about, you know, he only made $15,000. He attempted to submit the records into the court, but the court denied them, having denied his timely motion for additional time to comply with discovery. Sorry, I've lost track. In terms of the answering the orders, the contempt orders, yeah. I have an eyelash in there, I apologize. The issue with the child support, non-payment of child support, there had been a wage assignment always with Mr. Lewis's wages. And so he had anticipated that it would continue, and because of the delay in getting the order for the new child supporter signed, that did not occur right away. And so that was the non-payment of child support. He thought it would be taken out of his check. It was not being taken out of his check.
He thought everything was coming through that wage assignment, didn't he?
As I said, Mr. Lewis would have benefited from counsel.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cobb. You have 2 minutes. Ms. Fine, you have 17 minutes.
Ms. Fine, as you're coming up, I think I would like to start with this question. The transcript shows efforts by you near the close of the proceeding to avoid the contempt sanction, and I think that, to say the least, that was probably wise effort on your part. But nonetheless, how can we sustain the order in this case, given the manner in which this proceeding apparently went forward?
Court's indulgence. May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Frank Fine, appearing on behalf of the respondent, Maria Luz Perdomo Fuentes, who is in the courtroom with us as well as my entire staff, professional staff. For moral support, don't know if that will help, but you're right, Your Honor. Even in our motion, we stated that we don't believe jail will accomplish anything. We did not want jail, but jail is an opportunity to frighten someone, intimidate someone, to know that if they don't do what they're ordered to do, then they will face the consequences. In this particular case, all Mr. Lewis had to do was to pay and do what he was ordered to pay. For appellate counsel to stand here and say he thought it would be taken out of his wage assignment, in the findings of fact, conclusions of law that were prepared in 2013, from the first hearing where the court made all of these initial rulings that was never appealed from, that we had to now file an order to show cause, and now he takes an appeal, it's meritless because he should have appealed that first order. The fact is in that findings of fact on page 10, lines 7 through 15, it states that a failure by defendant to make any one payment is a contempt of court, and plaintiff may submit an order to show cause with a supporting affidavit declaration detailing the missed payments. I digress. I should have started at the beginning. The defendant shall pay plaintiff the full 241 in October by October 31st, commencing November 13th and continuing until there is a wage assignment in place. Defendant may pay the plaintiff $120.50 on the 5th day of the month and $120.50 on the 20th day of the month. A failure of the defendant to make one payment will be contempt. So he was again on notice, Your Honor. This man is lost in the face of this court. He says, I didn't have a lawyer. I should have had an attorney. You're right. If it was a criminal action, he We should have. If the court was going to impose a jail sentence, we would have had to come back to court, and an attorney would have been appointed for him. He had an attorney at the first hearing, the initial hearing that no appeal was taken. Shame on that attorney for not taking an appeal. But she did not. And this order stands. And this man continued to not take care of his daughter in any respect. So what I'm suggesting to Your Honor is that in May of 2013, a motion was filed to hold appellant in contempt. He was not truthful with the court. He told the court that he made one amount of money, and then when we finally got his income, his checks, we saw that he made commissions of over $400 a month. And that we could prove. We didn't have more. We only had three. If we had 12, we might have found out that he made $1,000 more a month, but we didn't. Did we take him back to court? No. We waited. We hoped he would pay. We hoped he would take. But that's money. Let's put money aside, and let's put the best interest of the child in front of all of us. That's what my client was concerned about. The money, yeah. Lying to the court, yes. But this child was in such pain. She was ill. She couldn't talk to her mother. She wasn't taken to the doctor. She was doing terrible in school and had to repeat the first year. Excuse me, court's indulgence. Why did she have to repeat the first grade? Because no one was helping in a joint physical custodial relationship 50% of the time with her homework. Dad slept. That's the testimony. That's true. Dad slept. When he was awake, she was on her own. A little girl.
There are findings to this effect. And this record, from a review standpoint, and I'll ask you the same question that I was addressing to Ms. Cowden, but to me, it's a problem that the law presumes joint physical custody is the best for the kid, and you want the children to maximize their contact with each parent, even if the parents don't like each other.
Absolutely true.
We hope for more. So the mother comes in and wants, let's put aside the contempt and the disobedience of court orders, which is troubling. But what justifies, I have two questions. One, what justifies saying that you can freely modify an order establishing joint physical custody just by showing best interests of the child without changed circumstances? Is that or should that be the law? I think Rivera says it is, but should that be the law? Secondly, what in this case beyond the father's failure to honor what the court saw as its clear and unmistakable orders, what beyond that was found by the court in writing or orally even to justify saying it may have been in the best interest of the child when we entered this decree for joint physical, but now we feel it should be primary physical with the mother? I don't see the findings, and I see a lot of argument back and forth about the evidence was kind of mixed.
Can I answer?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. My eyes are closed, so I'm coming up.
Yes, no, I understand that. It's a long question.
I wasn't in any stretch of the imagination board. I believe that Rivera covers it beautifully. I believe that the fact that they want a best interest standard would show that there was a change in circumstances, even though it's not specifically said.
Right, so you're saying change circumstances is required.
The father's lack of parenting, the father's neglect with the child, the father's inability to follow the orders, I believe all of that tied in together, Kumon, mental health, schooling, all of it tied in together shows that this child would fail and was failing, and that the best interest, because of those circumstances, required the custody to be changed.
Where are the findings in the record that support what you're saying?
Really?
No, where are the findings by the court? Not the evidence, but the findings.
What's the indulgence? I have the court's findings. I think that the findings from the third first hearing, 2013, from which it wasn't appealed, and from which they're trying.
But the first hearing didn't change custody.
No, it didn't change custody, but the court noted all of those things, and if you had been able to use that transcript, the court would have said, I don't understand why a change of custody wasn't asked for. It wasn't asked for because we were trying to maintain that relationship, allow the child to have both parents, hoping it would be a wake-up call for the father. It was not. The court, and additionally, Mr. Lewis lied to the court not once but twice. He lied
to though, to get an answer to my question, there are no findings for the change of custody in the order that changed custody.
Only that the court continually, I'm just looking for the findings,
the court continually said, you didn't follow through with this. I find that you didn't follow through with that. If I could. The court found the defendant to be in contempt on the money, and that was that. The defendant should be responsible for having Mr. Whitney's bill because he didn't follow through on the therapy. The defendant is in contempt of court for failing to bring the minor child to tutoring. That defendant is in contempt of court for it is further found and ordered. It is further found and ordered. Thank you, God. It is further found and ordered. It says that. The defendant shall be responsible for half of Mr. Whitney's bill. It is further found and ordered. The defendant is in contempt of court for failing to bring the minor child to tutoring on Mondays during his custodial time. It is further found and ordered. The defendant is in contempt of court for each of the missed child support payments. It is further found and ordered that in the future, if the defendant fails to follow the orders of the court, it is further ordered that as to the timeshare, the court finds based on the defendant's conduct over the past 10 months, that it is in the best interest of the minor child. So she made her findings. She made her findings in the order. And she says it is further found in order. So I believe the findings are there. I believe that they're specific. And I believe that the court can affirm and should affirm. And I believe that, if I could go back to my notes, can I answer that? Can I answer your question? If not, please.
Not really. And I appreciate the difficulty you face here. It's hard with an uncounseled person on the other side. But the law is that disobedience of a court order on its face is not enough to justify a change in custody, that you try to uncouple the two. And I thought you and I had agreement at that earlier, that well, a person who doesn't pay child support doesn't automatically lose his right of visitation.
Absolutely.
And he should not.
Absolutely.
So to me, what I'm trying to mine from the order is something that ties the findings of disobedience to court orders to the best interest of the child in changing custody, and that's the link that I'm not quite making. Because I think it's a serious matter to change from joint physical to primary physical.
It's incredibly punitive, but it's punitive when it's deserved. And in this case, it's deserved. I apologize, but if you look at the findings of fact from December of 2013, from which this appeal is really been taken, but it can't be because it's law. The order from the most recent order from 2014 similarly just says, you didn't do what you were supposed to do in 2013. They had to bring you back on an order to show cause in 2014, just 4 months later. You didn't do anything, and you lied to this court, and you didn't do any of the discovery. And you say, I didn't have a lawyer. Well, the court, the law, holds the improper person to the same standard as they hold me to, and if he needed an attorney, I don't see that the court was closed or pro bono was closed. He couldn't go down there and say, I don't make enough money. If he didn't make enough money or he needed legal aid, there are places he could have gone to for help. And yet, he didn't. But he did in this hearing, and now he has court-appointed counsel that tax dollars, with all due respect, not also are paying for. This man just doesn't take responsibility. I'm so sorry if I'm being emotional. But this little girl is thriving now, finally. And I know that's not your problem. I know that's not what's important right now. What's important is, was he punitively treated? Was he treated with bias? I can say that with all.
And is it inappropriate at some point if a person's another staff law to do that? I mean, is that what you're arguing, that if they're sufficiently contemptuous of a court's order that they should pay the price of loss of joint physical?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that if the court were to actually impose a sentence of the jail, that we would again have to come back to court, but the fact is that when you that the transcripts don't reflect with respect to bias, the transcripts don't reflect the disrespect and the disdain for the court that was displayed in the courtroom. The pro per litigants, as I said, are held to the same standard. He didn't respond to any of the discovery. He indicated that he didn't know how. Well, there's a self-help center. There's all kinds of ways he could have done it. He just simply allowed my request for admissions to go. I could read them to you and tell you what they are. He didn't answer those, and those are deemed admitted.
Let me interrupt and follow along on a question that these questions posed by Justice Pickering. If you could, without once referring to what the defendant did not do, identify those factors in the record between December 2013 and the subsequent order in which, on the best interests of the child alone, the decision would be made to change custody.
Yes, sir, we can do that.
Focusing on how the child's best interests would be improved or changed.
Mr. Willis refused to abide by any of the orders, and the order, the most important one is that he was opening the fan with respect to them, but which of all of the orders that went through the fans, in fact, but he refused.
And we want to focus on
that. Now, Isabella's cellular telephone remained unavailable when the waiter attempted to call. The police had to be called in order to do a well check. When they got there, they saw Wesley leaving. They had to chase him and bring him back.
There is nothing about this.
I believe that there is, but that she, Isabella's, was missing school because she needed care for the sick father, her sick father, is that Wesley neglected Isabella's health needs and refusing to follow the directives of her health care providers during the custodial time. This is all in between the findings of fact and the motion. Wesley's failure to complete homework assignments with her during his custodial days. She had suffered through strep throat and a progressive rash without treatment due to his refusal to take her to the doctor but complied with the doctor's instructions. Maria, at that time, Maria requested a formal change in custody based on that, Your Honor. And that was what she asked for the financial change on. After that, she talked about the financial issues. Mm-hmm. She hasn't asked the custody to change because of the financial issues. She asked that they be changed because she's the responsible parent. She's the one that's taking the child to the doctor. She's the one that's taking the child to the healthcare person when she was diagnosed with anxiety and post-traumatic stress. She's the one that made sure that the child was having a life as opposed to...
So the items, the facts you've just enumerated, you would argue support lines 23 through 26 of the order signed by the judge or filed on...
23 through 26,
it's... September 2nd, 2014, which states that that as to the timeshare, the court finds based on defendant's conduct over the past 10 months, and it is that statement that supports the next conclusion. The problem that we face as an appellate court, whether under Rivero or some revision to Rivero, we can't tell which of the items that you've identified, which some of which were contested, were actually found by the judge in the written order. And as you know, the court can only review written orders.
And the order states that the defendant shall be responsible for half of Mr. Whitney's bill because now the counseling is over. But he only called Mr. Wheatley, and by the way, Mr. Lewis's father returned the call. The message was received, and Mr. Lewis's father returned the call. But he didn't go until a motion was filed. It is further found that defendant is in contempt of court for failing to bring the minor child to tutoring on Mondays. It is further found that defendant is in contempt of court for each of the missed child support payments, but that wasn't why we asked for a change. We asked for the change because the child was not getting the help that she needed to be a beautiful young woman who could thrive. She was not thriving.
Clarify one other thing, because I admire your candor on the subject of the contempt. Are you conceding that to the extent that the contempt order did not contain a purge provision, that it was criminal in nature, and as a consequence we have to reverse it?
No, I do not. I believe that.
And on what basis would we suspect?
Because I would have to bring the matter back to court.
Yeah.
I would have had to bring the matter back to court before the court could make a determination. And at that time, could it be considered a criminal matter. But the fact is that he had every ability to purge it himself. That's why. That if he was going to have that not paid, it would have had to be brought back to court by me. And I would be the one that would say he needs to either purge or go to jail. He holds the keys to the courtroom door, to the jailhouse door.
So I believe
that the language might have been absent, and that would have been my fault. But I believe that he was given the opportunity to purge.
We're not faulting the lawyers about the orders. It's the judge's order. So the question that I have here is, what concerns me in the same vein that we have, we struggle at appellate level in looking at the order and whether it contains the specific findings by the judge on change of custody, we also struggle as to whether this order properly recites the purge language that would be required to separate it from. I guess my point, and maybe this is a practice point, what one perceives is contained in the record must carry over to the order. Do you have anything further you'd like to add?
Yes, Your Honor. And the consent findings that were necessary and appropriate to compel a speech of compliance with orders directly related to the child's well-being, it was not criminal and there was no actual sentence imposed. He was given, if you don't, the court was trying to get his attention. It didn't. The case law speaks of imposing a sentence and providing an opportunity to purge. Here, no sanctions actually imposed. Further proceedings required, again, as I said, for the sentence, suspended sentence to be imposed or for the sentence to be purged. And if he had paid and if he had done what he was supposed to be, then he should have filed a motion to purge it. He did not.
Didn't the order say that if he failed to make another payment in the future, he would be jailed?
But it wouldn't be automatic. It would have to come back to court for hearing.
But it doesn't have a built-in deal that if you make a late payment and you're held in the court and then you pay, you don't have to go to jail. Now, I appreciate the frustration here, and I'm sympathetic to what you're saying. But it's worrisome to me that it does not truly have a purge.
But the word if is the language in the contempt order. If the court were to actually impose a sentence, there would need to be some means to purge them and ensure that the court would include that purge provision at that time if we had to come back to court. Because I understood it to be that if he didn't pay, which he didn't, that I would have to come back to court and he didn't.
Okay. I think the problem may be there's a difference between staying an existing imposed sentence and a sentence that is imposed and the defendant, through their own behavior and conduct, can purge it.
Correct. That's exactly right. Thank you for saying what I was trying to say.
And
it's better.
The weakness in this order is rather than the defendant purging himself through his conduct, there's a risk in the order that he has to go back to court. And the sentence has already been imposed. It's just a matter of having been stayed. There's a big difference there.
It was stayed.
But I appreciate your efforts. You tried to make that at the district court level. Are there any other questions by the justices? Well, Ms. Fine, thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor, very much. I'm grateful for the opportunity. So is my time.
Okay. 2 minutes, Ms. Cowden.
Ms. Cowden, as you come up, I'll try to use your time wisely. 125.480 lays out the factors that you claim needed to be at least considered and we hope noted in the court order. I'm looking at the court order in it's shallow at best. But I would suggest to you that at least on page 6, the judge, 607, talks about matters such as care, custody, education, maintenance, and support of the child, the child's best interest. And then it goes on to talk about what these parties need to do together in order to meet those considerations of the statute. And I am still troubled. Now, twisting the shallow depth of this order with the fact that I don't see what your client did to comply, period. What is the judge to do?
To comply with the child support orders, Your Honor?
With the findings made by that court in its order that refer to the things that are considered to be in the best interest of the child.
Yeah.
The education between the parents, the education, the tutoring, the emotional support, the psychological therapy, all of those things are here. He didn't do any of it.
Well, that's not true, Your Honor. The allegations that he didn't take the child to tutoring are for the summer. In fact, from the beginning of 2013,
her health care, her all of that.
Okay, in terms of the health care, the testimony was quite clear when we looked at mother's testimony that the child was in her care for both the initial and the second strep diagnoses. and in fact was in the mother's care when the child was receiving the allergen that was causing her symptoms to increase. So it was she was entirely in the mother's care during that process. If you look at her testimony for why she blames Mr. Lewis for the situation, it's not because of anything that occurred at the time, it's because of what she perceives as some pattern, some unidentified pattern of
the dad had this one time, dad had to whether her dad parented when the child was in his
care. Well, there's certainly evidence in the record from, and I apologize for interrupting you, but evidence in the record from his mother that he did assist with the homework. The judge didn't believe him, so, and that the judge didn't believe him in the prior hearing. If we're going to go into the prior hearing, then by all means, let's go into it entirely.
And Chief, I apologize, I burned her entire rebuttal.
I did want to address, because I never answered your question, Justice Tardisi. And actually, the answer to that is in Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
In Rodriguez, the court in that case did impose a sentence that could be purged. The defendant in that case would go to jail, but if he paid a certain sum, then that sentence would be purged. That's what you can do. That's not what it. And as Rodriguez says, you have to find that they have an ability to make that payment.
But the point of purge under Rodriguez is that the defendant, who's the subject of the order, controls their own fate.
Exactly.
So.
But as you pointed out in this case, and as we said in the brief, there's no opportunity for that. The sentence was imposed. It was suspended.
From December through, or whenever the first order to the second order, he certainly had the ability to pay, or to make some effort.
He did make payments, Your Honor. There's evidence in the record of making payments.
Was it $90 a month or something?
Yeah. And again, there was no finding of an inability to pay more, or of an ability to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
There's no finding in this record of a present ability to pay more. And with that, I'm done, unless you have more questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cowden. I don't think there are any other questions. We thank counsel for their arguments here today, and the case will stand submitted. We really appreciate the input of both lawyers.